Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on this weekend edition of 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on today's program, some interesting news stories in relation to health and some products and just the general health of America. Some interesting numbers to look at there. Also, preview what's coming up this weekend here on Trumpet Radio. Lots of great programming on the way. We'll look at that as well as at Trumpet.com. And finish up taking a look at this great booklet, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online. We're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here as well. This is 101.3 KPCG. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. Also, any emails, send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Going to be a beautiful day coming up today, 80 degrees, but then the weekend is going to be a little cooler. So we have replays throughout the week. And so depending on what time you hear this, that may not be relevant because it's going to cool way down, but 80 degrees on Friday.
Yeah, and I've really appreciated the changing of the colors of the trees and all the different bright red leaves on all the streets as you drive past. So that's been a nice part of transitioning into fall right now.
I noticed that the other day. It was beautiful. I thought, wow, we don't always get nice fall colors here. It depends. But this year we really do have some nice ones. Then when the sun comes out, it really is quite nice. So beautiful time of the year, even though I guess supposedly it's going to be some pretty cold winter weather. Maybe in the, you know, throughout the U.S., I don't know exactly what parts, but there's a polar vortex. Look out for the polar vortex. It's going to make it cold some places.
Yeah, like for example, in Buffalo, every year you get through like mid-November or maybe the start of December, and then all of a sudden they get like 3 feet of snow dumped on them, like almost overnight, it seems like. Especially up there in the north and northeast, it just comes so quickly.
I'm hoping for a little snow this winter here in central Oklahoma. Nothing crazy, but I would like a little bit. So we'll see what happens. Some interesting stories to look at today to start. Health-related news. We've talked over the years about energy drinks. There's always been a bit of a concern about what's in them, what kind of what they do for your health. I don't think anyone thought they were incredibly healthy, but there's a new report saying that they're really pretty bad for you. Few people would ever claim that energy drinks are healthy, it says, but it's easy to assume they're fine for your health, given how popular they are. But new research suggests they're actually pretty bad for you. The study was published in Frontiers in Public Health, reviewed current scientific evidence on energy drinks, and found that their short-term benefits, namely, they make you feel more awake, are outweighed by scary health risks like mental health problems, risk-seeking behavior, increased blood pressure, obesity, tooth erosion, and kidney damage. So pretty bad health news related to energy drinks.
Yeah, I used to think that ginseng was like the miracle vitamin in those energy drinks because you do feel so great after drinking one of those. And ginseng is a common ingredient in a lot of those drinks. But like you said, the health benefits, they tend to set in. They're not immediate, but even sometimes right after having one, you get that energy boost, but then your mind is flitting around to 1,000 things a minute. You can't really keep your focus on any one thing because you're just moving too fast.
And I don't know. It seems like a lot of drinks like this are sort of addictive, you know, where I don't know that people are drinking just one. And they're usually pretty good size. They're big containers. But they say these drinks can have up to 100 milligrams of caffeine per ounce, which far exceeds the recommended daily limit of 400 milligrams for adults. An 8-ounce cup of coffee, by comparison, contains 95 milligrams of caffeine for the entire cup. So a lot more caffeine in there than coffee would have. And again, it's not usually an 8-ounce drink. They're usually, I don't know what they are, but they seem like they're at least 20 or bigger in most cases.
Yeah, they have like those mega cans that they have a lid that you can twist back on because they're not meant to be consumed all at once. So that just shows you right there how big some of those canisters are. And then you, whenever you pop the can off, like this smoke comes up out of it. It's pretty incredible. It's almost like you're drinking rocket fuel.
Yeah, wow. Well, they say, moreover, it's hard to know exactly what's in the drink. That's according to a doctor, David Cutler. He said a lot of these have ingredients in them that aren't on the label. And the reason that they can do that, energy drink companies can do that, is because the product is considered a supplement by the Food and Drug Administration and isn't closely regulated. So because it's considered a supplement, the regulation isn't very tight on that. There can be a lot in there. And it's interesting because a lot of times teenagers go and buy these, or kids. And I don't think they'd allow kids or teenagers to go into like a GNC and just start buying supplements. I don't know that for sure, but that's my guess. But here, this is considered a supplement also.
Well, it's not surprising because athletes get suspended for steroids all the time, and a lot of the time it proves to be because of a tainted supplement. If they're not regulated closely enough, sometimes these supplements are mixed in the same bowl as maybe an actual steroid was, and then guys get in trouble for it. So there could be all kinds of hidden ingredients or even really dangerous things in some of these supplements, or in this case, energy drinks.
Gotta be careful with those. They don't totally know what's in them, so they don't have to list all the ingredients. And even the ones they list, you know, you'd need a thesaurus to figure out what it is. That's
yeah.
Strange. That's kind of the rule of thumb that I've heard over the years. If it has a lot of ingredients, it's probably not great. And if you don't know what they are, you can't pronounce them, probably not great. they're not going to hide, you know, a really high quality vitamin behind a bizarre name usually.
Right. Yeah, when I was 16, I used to collect the energy drink cans. I thought they were pretty cool looking. They're designed well. They're marketed well. There's even a professional soccer team, the New York Red Bulls, that's named after an energy drink. They make them seem like they're just incredible, like those five-hour energy drink commercials. Just show you blasting through the day while everyone else around you is falling asleep. So you can just see why it's pretty easy for people to get into those and to get hooked on them in a variety of ways.
You've consumed one or two over the years, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would drink them, and then I would keep the cans. So,
yeah.
So it added up. I didn't drink them that often, but after a while, I had a few dozen of those cans.
I think I've had a few years ago, and did you feel like you got a boost from it, like it really did energize you, or was it sort of not as much of an impact?
It's kind of selective for me. If I felt like that was the reason I was drinking it, then I'd get a boost. It was kind of like a mental game for me. If I wanted a boost from it, I'd get a boost from it. If I didn't want a boost from it, I could probably just as soon take a nap right after having one.
Yeah. I think when people are younger, that's the case. I think as people get older, it seems like caffeine can have maybe a bigger impact, but yeah, I was the same when I was younger. I didn't feel like it made much of a difference, and that's maybe some of the deception in there, is that you can drink it usually and feel like, well, it, you know, didn't do much one way or the other, but you're putting a lot of stuff in your body, and it's always, you know, if you think about your organs and your kidneys and everything having to filter out all the stuff you're putting in your body, and you stop and think about it, sometimes that can change, you know, your mindset on what you're going to put in your body, because, you know, you drink it and then you move on, but your body's got to do all these things to make sure you stay healthy. And if you overtax it, you can have problems.
Yeah. I've seen some diagrams where they'll change like a burger and fries or a certain type of soda into the amount of sugar that it is. They'll just have a pile of white sugar next to that item. And a lot of the time it's like the equivalent of two large cups of sugar just in this massive pile. And so we probably wouldn't be consuming just straight huge spoonfuls of sugar, but we're usually fine with drinking the drink or eating the food item.
Yeah, because like you said, they package it in a neat package and put chemicals in there to make it have some sort of a taste that you might like or be sort of fun, I guess. But you're right, if you just saw the raw ingredients sitting there, you probably wouldn't want it, because in most cases, it'd probably be, like you say, smoking out of a beaker of some kind. I don't want to eat that. I mentioned it before, but occasionally if you go to a shopping center, they'll have a big candy store. And at my age now, I look at that and I just almost feel sick. Like, ugh, I never want to go in there. But kids, my kids, they love it. We don't really go in there very often, but when they walk by, their eyes get huge. You know, they're like, look at all that candy. It's funny the way your mind changes as you get older, because when you're young, you think that's paradise. Like, mm-hmm. there's nothing greater than that. But I don't know. The older you get, you think, I don't really want that.
Yeah, and that's the difference, because kids are usually limited on how much they can consume of those types of products. And so for them, it's a rare treat. But then when you get older, probably once or twice you've binged on those things without anyone telling you you couldn't have a lot of it. And then you realize that, oh, this actually isn't as great as I thought it was.
Yeah, and then reality limits what you're going to do in a lot of cases. Related, another health note, this is from The Guardian today. Just 12% of Americans eat enough fruit and vegetables, according to the CDC. So a little quick math tells you that 88% of Americans are not eating enough fruit and vegetables. Congratulations to those 12%, though.
Yeah.
It's tough to do in this day and age, and somebody's doing it on the positive side.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't be part of the 12%, because a lot of the time what they're judging by, it's like, 4 or 5 or 6 different servings a day that you have to eat. And probably most of us don't do that unless we're almost tricked into it. Maybe it's like a small side dish to the main meal, or we put into a shake. That's usually the way to get your fruit and vegetable servings. Otherwise, it's very difficult to eat that much.
It's a lot of it, yeah. They say just 12% of Americans eat the minimum daily fruit recommendation and of 1.5 to 2 cups per day, and only 9% consume the minimum daily vegetable recommendation of 2 to 3 cups per day, according to CDC study that was published Thursday. The study, which broke out groups of Americans by state, class, race, and gender. Can you do? I thought that was all like racist. You couldn't do that. found some subgroups that were even less likely to eat enough produce. Men, young adults, and people living in poverty all had especially low rates of fruit and vegetable intake. While 15.1% of women eat the recommended amount of fruit each day, good for them, just 9.2% of men do the same. And similarly, 11.4% of wealthy Americans eat enough vegetables, but only 7% of poor people did the same. So not surprising, I don't think.
No, because it's the paradox of the most healthy things being the least delicious and at the same time the most expensive. It's not as pleasing to the palate unless you acquire the taste for it by eating it regularly, and it also costs more. So if you're strapped for cash, you're probably not going to be heading straight for the vegetable aisle.
Yeah, and I think, you know, an education really helps. If you can get some education as to how to eat a little healthier and then how to prepare some things, you can kind of start to maybe swing the balance a little bit. It still is going to cost you something, obviously, but if you know what to prepare and how to prepare it, it can save a lot, as opposed to just going into a Whole Foods type establishment, which not everything there is great either, and just saying, I don't know, I'm going to eat this and this. And again, this does highlight the fact, though, that the place of, a woman, if she is really embracing her role and taking on the responsibility of really having the house running in tip-top shape and taking care of the family in a lot of ways with the kids and so forth, and cooking that way, what a great benefit and service that is.
Absolutely. And even just in acquiring the ingredients, taking the time to search all the different locations and finding which ingredients are the cheapest but also the healthiest depending on what you're going for, and then finding the recipes, things like that, where it does take a long time and it is a full-time job. And if, you know, for example, if both adults in the household are working all day, then all you have time for is maybe to just throw something together at the last minute when you get home.
Yeah, and you know, if you watch a show like some of these cooking shows, they're really praised for their knowledge and their expertise. And the thing that's interesting is that in that setting, you know, if you look at somebody that's on, like, say, whatever these shows are, Master Chef or some of those, you know, you look at them, you think, wow, I mean, what a skill and what a talent and what an ability. But when it's framed as, say, a lady doing that within her home, it's kind of looked down upon. But it really is just an outstanding skill. And you have to be educated and you have to really be on top of your game to make sure the family is getting the healthy food they need, that you can do it on a budget, that it's palatable, as you say. And then look at the benefits of it, the health benefits to the entire family. Less has to be spent on medical issues. Just so many benefits from it, and yet that role is kind of looked down upon, but it's so valuable in the home.
It's so backward too, isn't it? Because the stay-at-home wife and mother is providing those benefits for her family members, those closest to her, those she loves the most. A chef is doing it for money, but also just doing it for complete strangers. And so who would you rather benefit, your close family members or people you've never even met before?
It's a real skill, and it's vital. The CDC report says that a poor diet is linked to cancer, obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. Public health authorities have long endorsed a diet rich in fruit and vegetables. The CDC's finding also showed the disparities in fruit and vegetable consumption by state. For example, just 2.2% of South Dakotans between 18 and 30 eat the recommended daily serving of vegetables. So they're particularly bad up there in South Dakota.
Yeah, I wonder what the reason for that might be. Maybe they hunt a lot up there. Maybe they just eat all meat.
Maybe it's hard to grow a garden. I don't know.
That's possible too, yeah.
They say people in West Virginia, which often top lists of the least healthy and poorest U.S. states. Come on. So I feel so bad for West Virginia. They were the least likely to get enough vegetables on average. Just 5.8% of West Virginians ate the recommended amount. It'd be interesting to also see how much Mountain Dew people drink in relation to this. Residents of Alaska were most likely to eat the recommended amounts of vegetables, which is funny, I guess, because it's more ice, right, and snow. Though the percentage is low, only 12% of adults there eat enough. So even there, it's not great. Not great in any state in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, that. I think you said it's maximum of 5 cups of vegetables and fruit combined, and even the required amount is not much less than 5 cups. That's a lot. That does add up pretty fast whenever you have 3 meals a day, and 5 cups of those 3 meals have to be fruits and vegetables. That's quite a lot, and it's something that probably a lot of people just don't really look forward to doing.
Yeah, so not good news, and not surprising that there's so many health problems then too. You know, it's interesting because there's a lot of healthcare debate right now, and thinking about passing bills and reforms and things. Well, what about getting back to just healthy eating as much as possible? You know, that would be a huge savings for the healthcare industry. But again, it would require change, and that's something that people don't seem excited about.
Yeah, I guess the healthcare debate centers on, should we take responsibility for our own health or should we rely on the government to provide it for us? And it's almost like there's no middle ground anymore. It's even if we did have health problems, why not pay our own money instead of being forced into certain programs and forced to pay for those who can't afford it and those types of, frankly, un-American ways of providing healthcare. But like you said, it all does start with our own physical health. The healthier we are, the more likely that our offspring will be healthy and they will live lives that are more happy and enjoyable because they won't have to deal with all these health side effects.
Yeah, even relating it back to those energy drinks, I think probably a lot of people drink it because they like the flavor and the taste, but if somebody's drinking it because they want more energy, well, a healthy diet takes care of that. You know, you don't have the huge lulls, typically speaking, unless you have some sort of problem, but for the most part. So that eliminates even that. Here's another health note. Denver doctors say 11-month-old boy's deadly heart condition was likely related to marijuana. As of this writing, they say this is the first reported pediatric death associated with cannabis exposure. Lo and behold, we're finding out more and more about what cannabis can do.
And it's probably not the only one. I mean, it's pretty likely that it's happened more than one time in American history. So we're just finding out about it now, but this is probably something that is affecting a lot more people. I guess pediatric, is that just talking about children then?
Yeah, in this case. Yeah. And but it is something to consider because if you have something in the home, the children can get into it. Or what if somebody's pregnant and they smoke this stuff? Are they going to stop? You know, sometimes people don't. And then what does it do to the developing child? But then also, just even if it's in the house, and, how are you going to prevent your kids from getting a hold of it? So there's a lot to consider there. There's a really good Trumpet brief sent out the other day that you need to look at, too. Marijuana legalization, what are the effects? As it points out, we're just 5 years into this legalization, and we don't know enough. We don't have enough data yet to see what's happening. And so it's, would be a good idea for people to maybe stop and say, what are the effects of what we're doing? But they're just pushing straight ahead with it, and we're finding more and more problems with marijuana.
Yeah, and it is sad that we even have to get into studies about this type of thing, because even just looking at it from a common sense standpoint, why is it that people have to take these substances that everyone knows alter your state of mind? That's why people take it. They take it to try to escape, and then they try to start hallucinating. And, you know, obviously that's pretty far from reality. It's pretty far from having a true hold on your senses. That's why people are using them. But what is the reason? Why do people need to turn to that for some sort of fulfillment? That's something we need to look at as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of statistics that are brought out here just in this trumpet brief on the marijuana legalization. Again, 5 years on from it being legalized, and so in some states. So they don't have a ton of data, but here's what they do have. One thing is that homelessness has increased in all of the past 5 years, giving Colorado some of the nation's highest vagrancy rates. Directors of homeless shelters and people who live on the streets tell us homeless substance abusers migrate here for easy access to pot, according to the report. So more homeless are showing up. Surprisingly, it's not the doctors and lawyers coming to town or whatever industry. You know, if you think about marijuana usage, what do you think about? You know, people that aren't probably the most productive in society.
Absolutely. That's obviously what everyone knows is the case. That's what's even glamorized in the movies, that people who smoke marijuana don't wake up till 3 in the afternoon. They don't have to go to work or anything like that. That's what is glamorized, and that is the reality too. I mean, how can you be totally hooked on a substance and really be productive in life? There are a few people I know who may be successful to a certain measure, but really that's in spite of their addiction to drugs. They are addicted to drugs, and somehow they overcome that, but it is an obstacle in the way of success.
Yeah, and it's like anything, you know, stay tuned, right? We don't always know the end results of things right away. One other thing from this trumpet brief on marijuana legalization: Colorado now leads the country in marijuana use among teens, so it filters down. In this state's K-12 schools, drug violations are up 45%. 71% in high schools. School suspensions for drugs are also up 45%. And again, it's so strange, because, you know, it's illegal in one spot but not in another, or it's legal for one group but not for another, and it starts to kind of blur together. There are already nearly 100,000 teens treated every year for marijuana dependency in America. Why treat them? If it's fine when you get older, just let them roll, right? I mean, it's legalization is certain to boost these addiction rates. What's worse, marijuana is a gateway to worse drugs, of course. Bristol University researchers found that teens who regularly smoke pot are an astronomical 26 times likelier to begin using other drugs by age 21. Once you start with one, why stop there? Why not keep going? And that's what is happening.
Yeah, and it is really sad to see the effect of these insane laws on the young people. They have to suffer through people who are just too lawless to stop their addictions in their tracks. We have to instead change the law to fit people who are addicted to marijuana, and then people 11 years old are dying of a heart condition. You know, that's the result of this. And also in society, we tell our young people, well, these vices, these sins like cigarettes, drug abuse like marijuana, pornography, you can't get into those until you're 18 years old. But then the young people think, well, these are vices. They're wrong anyway. Why are you telling me that I have to wait until a certain age to engage in them? And so, of course, the young people are going to get into them even worse and control it even less, if you could even say control it. And the effects are going to be even more severe on the young people.
There was a commercial years ago. People will remember this, I think, as a public service announcement trying to get people to not smoke marijuana. That was back when they used to actually fight against that. And this kid is sitting in his room and is listening to some music, and his dad comes in, kind of a business guy looking, business. You know, he's wearing a tie and suit and everything. And he's got a box full of marijuana. And he says, "Is this yours?" And the kid's like, "No." And then he's like, "Is this yours?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Who taught you how to do this?" And the kid's like, "You, Dad. I learned it by watching you." And then it said, "Parents who do drugs have kids who do drugs." Mm. It's an effective ad. I remember it. But now that's exactly what's happened here. The kids are doing the drugs because the parents are doing them too.
Yeah, and it's just a terrible example that the adults are setting, basically saying, don't do what I do, just do what I tell you to do. You're supposed to lead by example in the family, and you can't just tell your kids, hey, you know, the whole house may be clouded up with marijuana smoke, but you don't engage in it. We're the ones who are allowed to change our mental state whenever we feel like, just for our own recreation, but you can't engage in it yet. That kids are not going to respect that message nor respond to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom just in the idea that if it's not okay for kids, it's not okay for parents either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is an R movie okay for parents but not for kids? You know, now, there may be an exception if it's like a, I don't know, like a documentary that's a little more intense or something like that. But still, the general principle, I think, is it's a really good point you bring out. If it's not okay until you're a certain age, why is it okay at any age?
Absolutely. And that's true of almost everything. I mean, it's not just marijuana. It's all these different vices that people get into that, you know, we try to justify it by saying, you know, adults are older, they're past that teenage age where we're prone to making dumb decisions. I mean, even our brains chemically as teenagers make us more prone to bad decisions, it's been found. But even still, is that a reason to just get into every type of sin just because we're a little bit older? Why even put an age restriction on it if you're just going to be involved in rampant immorality in a few years anyway? As young people, when you're 17, why is it you can't do it, but the day you turn 18, all of a sudden anything goes?
Yeah. Of course, I guess the only exceptions to that would be things that you do have to wait to be an adult to do, like buy a house and, you know, get married.
Right.
Things that you do need a certain level of.
Which are actually good things good in the things, first place. Yeah. Good things come in time. Bad things you should never engage in any time, so it's hypocritical to even put an age restriction on it.
Right. The vices, that's the issue. Yeah, this time of year, Thanksgiving and such, sometimes people are getting together with families, and what do you talk about around the dinner table? Don't talk about politics. 1 in 3 U.S. adults to avoid talking politics over holiday season, according to Reuters, which the scary thing is 2 in 3 are going to talk about politics. They say people appear to be more interested in talking about religion or even their personal finances with cousins and in-laws than they are about discussing hot-button issues such as tax cuts, Obamacare, and the Russia investigation. I don't know that I'd want to bring up personal finances and religion with people, but they'd rather talk about that than politics.
Well, think about that, talking to an atheist cousin and saying, well, so let me talk to you about God and then,
yeah,
and then Christ our Savior. People would rather do that at this point than say, you know, I like Mr. Trump's latest plan for the border wall. Apparently, somehow we got to the point where the latter is so controversial that people would rather talk about religion, which used to be pretty divisive as it is. Now it's nothing compared to political talk.
Right. Yeah. Can you imagine, you know, changing the subject by talking about your bank account?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about my financial statements here and change the topic. That's something people wouldn't usually want to get into either, but it does show how divisive the politics have become.
Yeah. I mean, even, yeah, like you say, finances is an extremely personal issue as well. You don't want to be just publicizing that you went into debt and made a bad decision, or I have all this money in savings so that maybe someone could try to take advantage of you. Those are things that you normally keep private as well. And it actually used to be that way with politics. Asking someone who they were going to vote for used to be an extremely personal question, but now that's out there and it's extremely divisive. And so people would rather turn to likewise uncomfortable topics like finances and religion.
They say poll respondents said they learned to bite their tongue after years of dinnertime squabbles over the nation's first black president, Barack Obama, and then his successor, Donald Trump. This one lady says, if you bring up Trump or something, you'll get a look from the other side of the table. It's like, whoop, let's change the subject, which is true. She said she learned this new holiday etiquette after a particularly stressful Thanksgiving in 2008. Obama had just been elected to his first term. And she was called a bigot for not supporting him by a family member. So she stopped talking politics after that Thanksgiving.
The brainwashing is strong, isn't it? To think that just because you disagree with someone's ideas, you hate the entire group of people that president comes from. That's what we've come to in political discourse now. And that's why people are so afraid to talk about it. Oh, you have a disagreement with the way that Barack Obama ran his foreign policy, then you're a racist. You have a disagreement with Hillary Clinton and the way that she operated as the Secretary of State, well, then you're a misogynist. You hate women. I mean, that's the way that people talk now. So, of course, no one wants to bring it up with their own family members and then cause division like that.
That's why maybe it's better just to turn on the football game. But even that, you can't do it because then there's the anthem protest.
And then people will probably be giving their opinions either way on that.
Yep. So, anyway, have a good Thanksgiving. one other quick note here. This is, we talked about Baltimore and some of the crime going on there. It's getting pretty bad. This one resident says, this is worse than Detroit in one way and even worse than Chicago. I know a lot of people that are scared to even come out of their building. I would hate to see this city go down. So that's what's happening in Baltimore with all the murders and the crime. Local residents are, in some cases, scared to even come out of their buildings or houses.
Wow. Yeah, that's really sad. And I saw some sort of a documentary where these guys were riding along with police officers. I think it was in New York, kind of where the rapper Jay-Z came from, and they were pointing out, like, this is the project building that Jay-Z came from, and the police officers were telling them, you're lucky you're with us, because if you were just driving through here on your own, it would be a very different story for you. You would not be allowed to come out of your car, and you'd probably want to speed up and get through it. And that's how it is in a lot of these big cities, and it's just so sad to see that happening in America. Why do we have no-go zones in this country that is supposed to be the most free of any nation on earth?
In relatively good times.
Yeah.
You know, just wait until things get more severe. So anyway, kind of a interesting note there about Baltimore. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story, who's behind the coup in Zimbabwe? You probably have been hearing this on the news. The general who just arrested Robert Mugabe may have the approval of Africa's newest imperial power. Who is their new imperial power? You'll have to read the article to find out.
Well, I'm intrigued. I genuinely can't think of it right now.
It's a teaser. It's a teaser. Andrew Miller wrote that piece, and so make sure you stop and check that out there. Robert Mugabe has not been a good leader over there. He's caused a lot of problems, but he's getting older, and so it looks like he's on his way out.
Yeah, and obviously he's flipped that nation on its head, especially after they were, what was it, the British had an influence there. I know that they were a former colony, and they were actually a lot more prosperous at that time than they are now. You have to wonder, why is that the case? Is it because maybe the racism now is far worse under black leadership?
Well, if you remember the news from turn of the century, when he came into power, one of the things he did is he took the farms away from the white owners and just kind of gave them out, redistributed them. And I remember watching the news footage on that, and it was a pretty bad deal. And lo and behold, under that chaotic system, those farms don't produce like they used to, and so now they have a lot of economic problems. And it's all because they took the farms away from those that would actually work them and make them productive, and just handed them out to other people who were apparently not willing to work or didn't have the knowledge to do it.
And to think we are trying to pursue similar policies today, choosing people for running a farm, for example, like in Zimbabwe, based entirely on the color of their skin, not on their qualifications, not on their life experience, not on if they've ever even like read a book about farming before. No, it's just, oh, you're black, so you can be a farmer. You're white, so your farm is gone, even though you're producing a lot for the country. And we have a lot of the same ideas now, where if you want to get into a certain college, it's probably best to be a minority of some kind, and then you'll have a higher acceptance rate, regardless of your test scores.
Well, I think Zimbabwe kind of highlights the fact that if a nation has wealth and has, of course, blessings from God, and of course there's a lot of sin in the different nations, and that's why they fall apart. But when people come in with the idea that, well, there's a lot of wealth here, we'll just take it. Well, but who's going to keep the wealth going? Like, it didn't just show up. You do have to produce something. You can take for a while, but eventually you've taken it all, and then what? And I think that's what they've run into.
Yeah, it's almost like you take all the chickens and you kill them all to eat the meat right away, but then you have no more chickens to produce any eggs, and so you're out. You're totally out. You didn't think about producing any food for the future, and this is kind of similar as well, just because it is talking about farming. It is talking about crops, and that's kind of what they did. It was really short-sighted. They might have come in and pillaged everything that was there, but they didn't set up any sort of long-term plan. Their bigotry and hatred for white people got in the way of them allowing the nation to prosper for the future.
That gave me an idea for a new saying. and I don't know if this has been done before, but I'm gonna make this, coin this expression. If you eat all your chickens for dinner, you'll have no omelets for breakfast.
Exactly.
Did I make that up, or has that been said somewhere before?
It's so funny because I learned that from the show Survivor. They would, if they won some sort of challenge on the island, their team would get gifted a chicken, but then they're like, oh, we haven't had meat in 3 weeks. We need to eat this thing right now. And everyone's like, wait a second. Can we at least let it hatch some eggs first and have eggs for a week or two, and right. then eat the chicken? So it does show you there's a short-term goal and there's a long-term goal. The short-term goal just totally destroys any hope of a good long-term goal.
And that's a lot of pressure for the chicken. You know, if you don't put out some eggs, they're coming for you.
You better prolong your own life by producing something.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of pressure. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, talking about a couple of great examples of godly ambition, Herbert W. Armstrong and Winston Churchill. So it's been a pretty negative news cycle, but he took a more of a positive approach today, which was nice.
Yeah. And we have to have that. A lot of these headlines, they're just negative in nature, and it's easy to get bogged down in that, but there is obviously a lot more hope that we try to bring out as well.
There's a really interesting write-up in CNN. I didn't really get it to get into today, but they're speaking of like some of the problems going on and the immorality, and their big opinion piece blames, of course, the current administration, and says that up until this time all the presidents had a pretty good moral, you know, compass. I was like, really? I don't want to name any names here, but it seems like there's been a few problems over the years in terms of morality in the highest office of the land.
Yeah, and that was even covered on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this week with Bill Clinton, and there were a lot of accusations toward Barack Obama for different things as well. I mean, it seems like everyone has had some sort of issue, at least in the last couple or few decades. Some obviously a lot more severe than others. But it is funny that some writer could just sit back there as the moral judge of all these different presidents.
Yeah, it's bizarre to say the least. But anyway, much better news there on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show about some good examples of godly ambition. A new Key of David program this weekend as well. It's here on KPCG. Also, it's at thetrumpet.com and on television. The mass shooting in Texas. There is a cause and a hope-filled solution to the mass shooting epidemic in America. That news has sort of gone by the wayside to some extent, but still a huge situation from just a few weeks ago there in Texas, that shooting, that church shooting. You're going to hear some things on this Key of David that you're not going to hear anywhere else, so make sure you do check that out.
And the description of that shooting is just horrific as well, just how he apparently just walked down, up and down the aisles, and he shot babies and he shot people who were trying to duck under the pews. It's just terrible and incredibly demonic, and that program gets into that as well. There is a deeper cause for it. It's not just one crazy man or, like some people try to say, the weapon that he was holding. Those are not the root causes for why he did what he did.
Terrible situation there, but a really important Key of David program. Here's an interesting event from this day in history. 1869, on this day, the Suez Canal opened in Egypt, linking the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. And that's a very important canal. The Trumpet had a write-up in 2015 talking about the Suez Canal, and it said it's one of the world's most important trade corridors. It is the fastest shipping route between Europe and Asia, and it handles 7% of global seaborne trade, a number that is now set to grow dramatically because they were expanding it at that time. On January 17th of that year, the Iranian state-sponsored news agency published an article that said boldly, "Today all the arteries of oil transport from Bab el-Mandeb Strait to Suez Canal and the Strait of Hormuz are under Iranian control by means of Syria, Yemen, and Bahrain, and within range of Iranian missiles. Iran wants those sea gates, and they're going to get them." And so you have to keep your eye on those canals and those waterways.
That was actually the first thing I thought of when you said Suez Canal. Iran's aggression in that area, and even just their outright threats of America and some other countries who are trying to ship through that canal. It is indicative of their ability to seize these different strategic choke points and form certain alliances in the region, and they are trying to set up as much influence there around the Mediterranean Sea as well. But the thing is, they're not seeing that Germany has all these outposts that actually surround them. They have no idea, because Germany is just remaining in the background. They're not indicating their desire to be a world power, just like Iran wants to be.
There's a lot of strategy going on over there with those sea gates, and even on the Key of David last week, on Iran being the king of the Middle East, it talked about and showed that land bridge going from Iran there to the Mediterranean. And so they want those sea gates, and you know, we don't talk about that a lot here in the local U.S. news. But if some foreign powers own those gates, which is happening more and more, they decide what comes and goes. I don't know if the thought is, oh, well, we'll go take them back if we want them. Well, maybe not. And it is important. And so we're over here arguing about, you know, transgenderism and so on and so forth, and other nations are taking sea gates. We're obviously heading in a direction where we're not going to be much of a global power shortly.
That is incredibly pathetic, isn't it? Just the difference of focus between America and some of these other Gentile powers, who actually are, in a way, they have an advantage because they're not held down by some of these social justice causes and all these ridiculous protests that are splitting their countries in half like we have here. They're just focused on dominating the entire world, and I'm sure a lot of Iranians don't like the regime that they're under. But at least they're in a nation that is trying to dominate the world. At least they're in a nation that is proud of who they are, instead of trying to undermine its entire history like we have over here.
Yep, very important developments with some of those different sea gates. We want to finish today's program by talking about finishing up talking about this great booklet, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. And, of course, it's such an important thing to look at, because fatherhood is under attack in America. And the West. And then there are so many problems socially now with just turning everything upside down. So this is an important topic to look at. And it talks here about, towards the end of this booklet, about a fatherless society. Years ago, that would be hard to imagine. It's not hard to imagine anymore, because we almost have that. I mean, there certainly are still fathers out there, but they're few and far between. The May-June 1970 issue of Tomorrow's World magazine asked this: if the devil could get a society and make it the way he wanted it, what would it be like? And then it gives you the answer. Well, he did. It was Sodom and Gomorrah. Or you could also answer it and say, well, take a look at America today, because we're exactly the same.
Yeah, and the stats just show a tremendous a percentage of children are growing up without a father in the home, or they're growing up where the parents have split up and they're shuttled back and forth between the father's house and the mother's house. So it's easy to understand how Mr. Armstrong was absolutely right about that, and how much worse it's getting now. It's the trends are just continuing in the wrong direction, where we just keep on attacking the family more and more, and sure enough, the family is disintegrating right before our eyes.
It's very confusing. You know, there was even a write-up today. Some actor, again, is accused of sexual misconduct. And this particular actor works on a show. I'm not familiar with it, but from what I could gather from the article, it's on one of these, what would you call them? Those cable channels that you have to pay extra for. The ones you probably don't want. it's on one of those networks, I believe, or actually maybe it was even online. But apparently the show is about just transgender people.
Mm.
And so the actor plays a transgender. And then so now on the set, there is accusations that he assaulted somebody, and the person accusing him is also transgender, or is for real, and just trying to even make heads and tails of, like, who's saying what now, and who's what. Like, the whole thing was just confusing, and that's, again, as we've talked about this week, if you look at what's happening to the family and the destruction of the family, it's just so much confusion. And it's getting more murky and more messed up all the time, and it is a society that is... it's like Satan wants it. He likes confusion. He likes anarchy and chaos. And we see that everywhere today, socially here in the U.S., and the destruction of the normal, yes, normal, biblically based family and fatherhood.
Yeah, there is a reason why boys grow up wanting to play with trucks and different balls of different sports, and then girls want to play with dolls and dress up. That is the natural inclination, but we're so confused now that we have children as young as 4 and 5 who parents are just letting them choose their gender, or parents are even being told, you know, take your child to a hotel room, come out dressed up as a woman and see what how your child reacts to it and see if they'd be receptive to making that choice themselves. Like we've had on that on the Trumpet website, how that is actual child abuse, how they're trying to push these life-changing, life-ruining decisions on young children now. It's just completely opposite to how we are naturally inclined to grow up and what we're going to be interested in, what our traits are going to be, how we interact with other people. It's just all being changed and flipped on its head. And like you say, with those transgender people, it's so confusing to read about it because certain publications will say he if it's a biological he, but others will say he if the person feels that he or she is a he, even if biologically this person is a female. But you don't know which publication is which sometimes and who's going to say he or she depending on the situation. It's literally just as confusing as the way I just said it, and you just can't figure out what's going on. Why do we have to have all that confusion, and have we seen any fruits of those people being happy, productive members of society, or have they committed suicide over 40% of the time?
Yeah, it's very destructive, and that's what's pointed out here in this book, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. It says the final end of any society run by the devil is the complete destruction of fatherhood. That's his goal, to destroy fatherhood. The devil himself, it says, cannot reproduce. Angels cannot reproduce nor marry. You can see that in Matthew 22. But God can reproduce himself, and God is in the process of reproducing himself in us, his begotten children, and you can see that reference in 1 John 3. And the devil wants to destroy fatherhood, for in so doing, he hopes to destroy God's true religion. There's a whole conspiracy behind it. It's not about freedom. It's about destroying the fatherhood. And if you think about how confused things are right now and the way the children are being programmed in a lot of ways and brainwashed, what would the next generation look like? What would the next generation of fathers look like? Would you even have any? And how far does it go before God says that's enough, and that's the end of it? You have to look to Sodom and Gomorrah, and you see what happened.
Right, and this is talking about reproducing. Do transgender people reproduce often? Is that, I don't hear too much about them being in relationships and starting families themselves. So, I mean, because you'd have to have a really, like, I guess, refined and specific area of attraction to another human being where you would be fine with dating a biological female who thinks in her head that she's a male. I mean, that most people are not going to be attracted to that, and they're not going to be successful in starting their own families. It's just like this booklet points out, Satan hates family. He hates reproduction because he can't reproduce like God is trying to reproduce a spiritual family. Transgenderism just attacks that idea of reproduction too.
Yeah, it's a really good point you bring out there. All of those movements that are away from what God ordained in the Bible, the thing they have in common is that they're all selfish.
Mm.
They're very selfish movements in a biblically based model of a family. As a father, you are instructed as to what you have to do, and a lot of it's a service to others, for the children, for the wife, for the family. The wife has service that she needs to do. The children have a certain service they have to provide. It's all about helping each other and giving to each other. But as you point out in these other weird and bizarre situations, it's all selfish. It's all about the self. It's not about helping anybody else. It's about getting what they want. And that's a huge difference between Satan's model and God's model.
And that's what we hear all the time from the media push is to chase whatever it is in the world that pleases you the most, doing whatever supposedly benefits you and not thinking about others until secondarily. So, for example, if a woman wants to leave the home and pursue a career instead of raising the children at home, go for it, because it's about what pleases you first, and then your family comes second to that. If a husband wants to commit adultery and abandon his family and marry that other woman, well, go for it, because you have to follow your heart, and maybe the relationship that you're already in and the children you're already raising don't fulfill you anymore, so you can just abandon that responsibility. I mean, you're literally hearing articles or reading articles like that, hearing messages like that all the time, where it's just the self is at the center of everyone's universe. No one is thinking about, well, what could I do to make the lives of other people better? And in turn, I'll be happier because I'm giving in my whole life. My whole life is centered around helping other people, and therefore I will also benefit from that.
Yeah, there's a really interesting point here that this booklet brings out, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. It's really worth considering. Talking about Christ and when he came to this earth as a human, and it says that he came to declare the Father. In John 1:18, you can see that. That is why he came to this earth, not to declare himself, as most religions teach. And so you have this attack against fatherhood today, very clearly. We talked about that earlier in the week about this write-up about toxic fatherhood. Well, Christ didn't teach that. He came to declare the Father. And so the movements you see today against family, against fatherhood, are those Christian movements? Not if you believe what Christ said and did.
Yeah, and it all gets back to selfishness again, because people are attacking fatherhood, which is the biblical definition of fatherhood is completely unselfish. And so they go for the opposite of that. They go for being totally selfish. Men, don't worry about your responsibility to your wives and your children. Don't even worry about being in the home, because actually, by the way, you're irrelevant in the home. Your family doesn't actually need you unless you subjugate yourself, let the women and children rule over you. That's the message now. It's all about not doing your part as a man, or as a woman, not doing your part, and it's just flipping the family on its head. No wonder people hate the biblical definitions of marriage, family, motherhood, fatherhood so much, because they're all based on giving to other people.
Right, and when the father role is destroyed, then people can't understand the connection to God the Father, because if you haven't had one physically, it's very difficult to have one with God the Father, a relationship. I mean, that can obviously be overcome. Not every situation is perfect, but it definitely makes things harder. And if this booklet finishes up by having a subheading that says, it's war. And it is. They say, do you know why Jesus Christ was crucified? For teaching his message about fatherhood. Think about that for a minute. And we're almost getting to that today, where if you teach the biblical model of fatherhood, people are enraged by it.
Yeah, they really are. And this whole trend toward accusing every man of having toxic masculinity within him is a prime example of that, because toxic masculinity means, well, you can't ever assert yourself as the provider, the protector, the decision maker in the family. You don't think women can open doors for themselves? How dare you? You don't think a woman could go out in the workforce and support herself, and that you would like to provide for her instead? How dare you? You are actually a potential sexual predator, is what they try to say. I mean, these messages are so terrible that men are actually terrified of taking the lead, which deep down, every woman wants. Every woman wants to be led by a man, and that's why feminists are the most angry people you'll ever see, because they are rejecting that, and no matter how many wins they gain in the culture war, they're still unhappy. They'll never be satisfied until they go back into their God-ordained roles.
That's a very good point about when things get out of the roles that God's assigned, you don't see a lot of happiness. You see a lot of protesting and a lot of anger, but you don't see a lot of joy and peace and contentment.
Well, they're actually still arguing for equal rights, but no one is able to articulate what rights they don't have. And at this point, I mean, it's almost luxurious the way that women are treated in society, because they're able to lead the family, but at the same time, they can expect men to pay for them on dates. So that's really convenient. They're able to increase their presence in all these different jobs, but only the good jobs. They don't have to go out and lay down railroad ties or drive dump trucks around. They're getting into more of the science type jobs, more of the more glamorous jobs that maybe men dominate in those fields. They're not necessarily pushing to have equal men and equal women in all the jobs that are a little bit less pleasant.
It's definitely a changing society, that's for sure. And it points out here something very interesting. It says Satan hates God the Father and his son Jesus Christ. You have to get back to that foundation of where the attack against family comes from. It says the devil hates the God family and is conspiring to destroy you physically and spiritually. And that's everybody. He doesn't like human beings, obviously. He never had an opportunity to be in God's family, and the knowledge that human beings do have that chance drives him to intense hatred. And then it points out Revelation 12:12, which is a very specific warning to everybody on earth, not just on earth, but in the sea too. That tells you how bad it is. That because Satan knows that his time is short, And what have you seen recently? It's just more wars, more animosity, more hatred, more division. And we're seeing that in these cultural wars in the U.S. especially.
Yeah, and that verse, Revelation 12, verse 12, is pretty shocking as well, because it brings out that God and the angels are actually rejoicing that they don't have to fight with Satan and the demons in the universe anymore. But what that means for us is that they're surrounding us now. There's millions of them just on the earth, rampaging, wreaking havoc, causing division, ruining lives. And it's something that we have to fight against all the time. And at the very foundation of that attack is the family.
And here's a kind of a concluding line from this booklet. And it's, you know, not something people want to hear, but this is something to think about. It says, people who fight in war against fatherhood are little more than puppets of the devil, and they use Satan's tactics in their warfare. He is behind the conspiracy to destroy fatherhood. When you think about the father, the role of the father being destroyed as far as the Bible defines it, you point back to Satan. He's the one behind it, and those that are also on board with getting rid of the biblical teaching, they're being influenced there. It says it uses his tactics in their warfare. What does he do? He accuses people of what he does. He's an accuser. He's a name caller.
He's a liar.
He's a liar.
A murderer.
A divider. Look at the tactics that are being used. Do we see name calling? Do we see division? Do we see accusation? Yes, all of those.
Yeah, it is quite an obvious parallel. So like you say, that might be offensive to point out, but what are the fruits? How are people acting? And is it not exactly like how the devil is described in the Bible? Of course it is. And that is who the role model is. And we've even seen with the radical left, they give tribute to Lucifer for being the first rebel, like Saul Alinsky said in his book. It's so obvious at this point that they're following the very tactics of Satan the devil. As offensive as that might be to say, it's still the truth.
But the good news in it is the reason that there's a war against the fatherhood in the first place is because the father, the biblical model of the father and the family, points to great things for mankind. If we'll be open-minded and open our eyes and see what the Bible says and judge by the fruits, there is a lot of hope in the message, but it is a battle against fatherhood and family right now. So everyone does have to think about that and protect themselves from it. Make sure you get that book, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. It's free at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time we have for today and this week on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program. It's a new one. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review coming your way. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.